walk through with you today is just quickly outline the dividend experience in Australia and how, as a good context for how it is different from when we go overseas and invest internationally. We'll look at the influence of the US market in terms of how it dominates our thinking when we go overseas. And the crux of the whole presentation is looking at the importance of dividends over the long term, its impact on total return, on earnings growth and volatility. We'll look at also some of the portfolio construction issues in terms of how one would build an above-average dividend-yielding portfolio. And also I'll wrap up with some of the risk reward characteristics of our own flagship fund. Matthew Saddington, the portfolio manager for Global Value Investors, will be presenting. He's been with us since inception. Without further ado, I'll welcome back to the stage.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Matthew Saddington. I'm a portfolio manager with Global Value Investors. I've been with the Global Value Investors since the inception of our fund, which is the Global Industrial Share Fund, March 2005. I've been working on this paper now for approximately 3 months, talking about the importance of dividends and dividends internationally, and something that maybe the Australian investor has not been able to see over the past 15 years or so. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the fact that dividends are an important part of the total return investing internationally. So, I don't really have to tell you guys why dividends are so important. I mean, dividends have always been an important part of the total return for Australian investors. And primarily, the reason for that is the franking credits that are attached to dividends from Australian companies. So, it's a very efficient way for investors to receive tax-free income if they have these franking credits. So therefore, obviously, it doesn't really matter if you're a value investor, a core investor, a growth investor. Everyone knows what the dividend yield of National Australia Bank is, CommBank is, and regard that as a very important part of the total return. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the signal theory. The signal theory is important not only for Australian investors, but also investors globally speaking. And this theory came up in about the 1970s, and there's been many variations about the signal theory, both positive and negative, and I'm just going to highlight a few of them, why the signal theory is so important regarding dividends. Now, unlike earnings over a long period of time, dividends are a much more transparent way of showing the health of a company and the profitability of a company. Now, we all know that earnings can be manipulated from year in, year out, much more volatile in nature, and this is due to restructuring, what's going on around the world. And so, therefore, a lot of companies will have earnings or will take off losses above and below the line. But dividends are a much more concrete way for investors to see the financial health of a company. We don't oftentimes see companies, globally speaking, wanting to lower the dividends or even halt dividends. You know, a lot of times they'll only be able to do this. They'll only do this. There's a massive exogenous factor that's happened, such as a plant's been attacked or there's an earthquake, then maybe they might have to halt the dividend payment per year. But generally speaking, if the dividend payment is cut or halted throughout the world, it shows signs of mismanagement of cash flows, and therefore it could hold negative repercussions for management. So therefore, management definitely don't want to lower the dividend payouts. Looking at it more of a positive note, management should be very prudent about their cash flows, internal cash flows, and dividend policies and payouts. So therefore, only when company management are very confident about the future will they look to increase the dividends over time. So it signals to the market that, yes, the management are confident about the earnings prospects of the company, and they're so much so that they're willing to increase the dividends, increase the returns, the guaranteed returns back to shareholders. So it does show a signal of growth opportunities. And lastly, it also aligns the interests of both shareholders and management much more closely together. Obviously, if management wants to raise the dividend payment, it's going to be very fearful, looked upon by the market. And so therefore, there might be an opportunity for the share price to re-rate. Now, what's happened for Australian investors is the fact that when they're looking internationally over the past 10 to 15 years, is that there's a lot lower dividend yields overseas. And so, you know, the Australian market definitely has a much higher amount of dividend yield if you look at the ASX 300 relative to other indices around the world. And this is based on the fact that, you know, when you're investing internationally, primarily people use the MSCI World Index as a benchmark, as a starting point to invest internationally. And of the MSCI World Index, you know, the U.S. market, the U.S. equity market represents approximately 50% of that. And so what we've seen over the past 15, 20 years in the United States is a pretty significant decline in the dividend yield, dividend payout, and dividend policy. Dividend policy has not been that important for U.S. market over the past 15 years. There's definitely some markets that have had very high dividend yields, but you know, by far, the U.S. market, which is approximately 50%, the Japanese market, which is also another 20%, have almost a very, very even a smaller dividend yield policy, and dividend policy does not really play out too much when you're investing in Japan. So what we saw in March 2000 was actually the S&P 500 index hit an all-time low dividend yield of 1.1%. And we have some graphs here showing this. This is the S&P 500 average dividend payout ratio since 1940. And actually, I do have information previous to 1940, which is that 1939, the Securities and Exchange Commission came about to basically have companies' books looked at on a yearly basis. Before that, dividend payments were even higher. They were almost 60 to 70%. And this is because the stock market didn't really trust companies whatsoever. So the only thing they really regarded as, you know, how successful a company was by its payout. So you'd see dividend yields up to 8, 9% prior to 1930. So anyways, I just wanted to show you between 1940s to 2005. And what we saw was a significant decline ever since the 1990s of the dividend payout policy in the United States. Once again, just to show you the payout ratio, this is on a yearly basis. And what we saw is that ever since the stock crash of 1989, a precipitous fall down to 2005, where it was, the payout ratio was approximately 30% in 2005. This is a graph showing the Russell 1000, which is a much broader index. And what this is highlighting is the amount of companies that actually pay dividends. So what we saw was back in 1979, approximately 85% of the companies listed in the United States actually did have a dividend policy. But what we saw, remember, between 1990 and 2000 was this declining precipitously down to approximately a low of 53%. So only 53% of the companies in the United States were paying dividends back in 2000, 1999. And there's many reasons for this in the United States, and some of them, you know, are rational and some of them are irrational. Let's talk rationally. Well, one major reason for this was because of the tax rate in the United States. And what we saw was that up until 2003, dividends were paid were looked at as recognized as income. So therefore, depending on what income tax bracket you were in, you'd have to pay tax on those dividends. And if you wanted a steady stream of income, if you're a U.S. investor, you would invest in bonds. State bonds, government bonds are all tax-free. It's a much more efficient way of gaining that guaranteed income. So what we saw was dividend policies losing importance in the United States. And that was the rational reason. We saw shareholders actually not want or not care as much about dividend policy. They were much more interested in companies buying back shares if they thought the share prices were undervalued, or acquire other companies. This was a much more profitable way for shareholders to gain that return, because capital gains is 15% in the United States. We also saw a sign in the late 1990s in the internet tech boom was dividends were a sign of weakness. If you were a U.S. company, or basically a company around the globe, and you were raising your dividends, it was a sign that you really couldn't find any growth for your company, and that you're almost giving up, throwing up the white flag, saying, I give up, I'm just going to give it back to shareholders because I can't find any type of growth for my company. And so therefore, I think that the best way for me to grow is in another company. So this is a sign of weakness back in the 1990s. So therefore, many management did not want to show this weakness. And therefore, It was almost a self-perpetuating cycle. We just saw more and more share buybacks if the value of the stocks were lowly valued, or they were just buying other companies. And what we saw was that companies being rewarded for this as well. Ramifications for this attitude, well, we saw, back in the 2001, when everything came crashing down, was inefficient empire building. A lot of companies were being bought that didn't make sense for company structures. The success ratio was anywhere between 30 and 50% done by consultants since this time. We've seen lower earnings per share growth in the United States ever since 2001 to 2005. We still see accounting scandals today. We're seeing people still being in trouble for the stock options that they received. And I'm just going to talk really quickly about the prospect theory. The prospect theory is a theory that's just come around more in the past decade or so, basically saying that if investors feel good about themselves, feel good and confident about the future, they don't really care about dividends. So therefore, they didn't place that high of a value on dividends. But in times, ever since 2001, 2000, even today, we're seeing that people are not so, they don't believe that the growth is here to stay for the rest of their lives, and they want to place much more importance on dividends. So therefore, we're seeing dividends become much more in vogue for the past 3 years as well. And also, we've seen tax changes in the United States. George Bush, one thing that he has done right, was that he lowered the tax rate for both capital gains and income dividend to a base rate of 50%. So we have seen companies definitely in the United States place much more importance on dividend payout ratios. We're starting to see the payout ratios in the S&P 500 start to creep up from that low of 1.1%. Now, over the long run, though, and this is where I was having a lot of fun looking at what the long-term dividend payout ratios were and what the implications are when you're investing over a much longer time horizon. Dividends have been very important, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. Obviously, everyone here understands the effects of compounding the dividends being reinvested, and therefore, the longer you have, the longer your time horizon is, the more important dividends are to your investment. They lower the overall volatility of your fund, of your return as well. And I have some numbers later on to show you this. And what there has been a lot of studies lately proving the fact that actually higher dividends equate to higher future earnings growth. There was one for the broader market done by Arnott and Asness in 2003 that said that they actually could predict what the S&P 500 earnings growth was going to be based on what the dividend yield was. And they saw, the higher the dividend yield, the higher future earnings growth was going to be for the next year. And this is pretty profound because everyone thought that, if dividends were increasing, that means that the management sees no growth, and so therefore earnings growth wasn't going to happen. But in fact, it's the opposite. I talk more about it in the paper, but I'll tell you a little bit more about it later down the road as well. And then there was another one done by Rula Denzel in 2006, just last year, where Arnott and Asness looked at the S&P 500 index. These guys actually looked at it on a company-specific level, just to say, so that works on the index and market weight. How does it look on a company-by-company basis? And it's also true on a company-by-company basis, too, that the higher the dividend yield was, the higher the payout ratio was, the higher future earnings growth is. And that also comes back to the fact that the more confidence management has in increasing dividends, the more confidence they'll have in future earnings growth as well. So this was done by a group out of South Africa called Plexus Asset Management, which I thought was quite interesting. This shows you the returns of the S&P 500 since 1871. And what it shows you, and I'm sure that you guys would probably figure this out, just from common sense, is that dividends play a huge role in the total return. Inflation plays 2.2%, capital growth plays 2.2%, and dividends play approximately 45% of the total return of the S&P 500 since 1871 to 2006. Now, obviously, 1871, there weren't that many stocks available in the S&P 500. I don't think it was the S&P 500. But there has been other studies that have shown shorter time periods, but still significant time periods, that show that the total return can revenue from dividends is quite significant. And so this shows you, we break it down by decades. So you can see the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, up until the 80s, dividends played a significant role of the total return, anywhere between 40% to 70%. And then what we saw in the 80s and 90s was dividends playing a much lower role in the total return. But on average, it's been 50%. So dividends have been important for the U.S. market, you know, ever since the inception of the stock market. And I have also some more numbers in my paper, and this is also true in the U.K. market, the German market, the Japanese market as well. And for longer time periods, that the dividends are important if you look over the long run. This is the return characteristics in local currencies. This is a report done by Michael Kepler. Unfortunately, it's only 20 years, but I also think it's quite significant just to show you how important dividends are to the total return. This is the dividend yield and the total return as a percent, and this is the capital gain. So the only one that really shows a lack of importance is basically Singapore, Japan, and Hong Kong. You can see where Australia is here at 31.6. There's many countries out there that actually have a much higher significance importance of dividends over the long run. I thought this was an interesting graph. This is the dividends or the total returns since 1972 and 2006 of the S&P 500. And this shows you, we've broken it down into five categories. So these are over here is the non-dividend paying stocks, what they've made per annum. Since 1972 to 2006, and they made a paltry 2.4%. Then we've moved it up to the dividend cutters and the dividend eliminators. They've made 3.6% compounded annual. This is the dividend payers with no change in the dividends at 7.2%. And all dividend paying stocks and, of course, dividend growers and initiators have performed by far the best over the past 34 years with 10.3% and 11%. So, it's almost debunking the modern portfolio theory that, you know, higher risk equals higher returns. The lower risk, the higher returns. And what I mean by this is that dividends also portray much lower levels of volatility than capital gains. So this is the components of the MSCI World Index since 1929 to 1989. So that's a very broad index. Just to show you that the volatility of annual dividend yields is only 1.5%. Very steady as she goes. So the larger proportion, the higher amount of dividends you have coming from your total return, is going to lower the volatility of your fund. Where you see the actual capital gains being much higher volatile, approximately 21% of your total return in the MSCI World Index. So what are the opportunities for portfolio construction? Well, there is a tendency, and I'm trying to prove there is a tendency for higher yielding stocks to outperform lower yielding stocks over the long run. They will only outperform, but they'll also be much more lower volatile in nature too, which is something that we're all looking for. There's a strong positive correlation between dividend yields and portfolio returns. The higher the dividend yields, the higher the portfolio returns. So there is definitely opportunities to exploit these market inefficiencies, and hopefully this debunks the market portfolio theory where higher risk means higher return. This is a graph that just shows you the other types of yields that you can get around the world. So, yes, Australia do believe in dividends, and that's great, because the dividends are a very important part of the total return. But we can also see, for example, in the United Kingdom, dividend yields are very important. We also see in Europe, ex-UK, that dividends are very important as well. And, of course, U.S. and Japan have had the lowest dividend yields available in the world today. So what does this mean? Well, we believe that value still outperforms growth over longer time periods, and that you have to not look at the MSCI World Index when you're investing globally. As I've stated before, the MSCI World Index approximately has 50% of its market cap coming from the United States, and another 15% coming from Japan, two areas that have the lowest dividend-paying companies in the world. So therefore, when you're going out in the world looking for investments internationally, we don't want you to look at just the U.S. and the Japan. We want to look at companies and countries that have much higher dividend yields and place much more higher importance on dividends, because that's what's going to lower the volatility of your portfolio and also increase returns over the long run. So it's not about absolute risk as far as but it's more about absolute risk exclusion, where we don't want you to lose money or gain money. We want to lower the volatility of the fund, not look at relative risk, which is the risk of, you know, how well you perceive, how well you do relative to the benchmark. So when you're building up a portfolio with an above-average dividend yield, you can do it yourself, and there are, you know, ways to look at dividend yields around the world, or there are some managed funds out there. However, when you do look at, you know, high-yielding companies, you also have to look at other qualitative factors, such as management quality, the ability to, you know, grow their earnings and dividends over time, look at balance sheets of nature, and also look at just the competitive structure of companies throughout the world. So we're hoping to show that, you know, we believe that active investing is much more important than index investing internationally for Australian investors, because the high points that the U.S. and Japan has in the index benchmark. You also got to be very aware of value traps. Many times companies with very high dividend yields also have are value traps and tend to be, you know, cheap for a reason. And so we believe that managed funds offer the easiest way for high exposure of high dividend yields. Thank you very much. I'm going to get ready for questions. I'm going to pass it on to William now just to talk a little bit about the characteristics of our firm. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. We're running well on time. Just to transfer the philosophy that Matt's discussed into our own flagship fund in terms of real life experience. This is our flagship fund since inception. And you can see that we look nothing like the index. We have 65% of the portfolio in Europe, another 9% in the UK, and less than 10% in the US. We hold no US financials that have ever had since inception. So it's a very different looking portfolio, which is very much bottom up, true low bottom up. And you can see that you can achieve, you know, decent return, but with substantially far less risk than the peers in the medium market, with 34% less absolute volatility. And I don't know about you, but I don't like to admit being last in anything, but this is one of the few exceptions that I would. If you look at, obviously, the annualized return is obviously a good one, but more important than that is the actual standard deviation of the 103 managers surveyed since inception to June. And this is a modified universe. We've added managers that don't necessarily participate in this survey, like Platinum and a few others. You see that we have the lowest volatility of the managers surveyed, and most importantly, so we're last in that category. And in terms of risk reward, in terms of what returns we generate for the risks that we've taken, you can see that we're up there in terms of that risk reward ratio. So that's very pleasing, and to some extent, is reflected in a lot of the philosophical approach that we have that Matt's gone through in that presentation. So, going ahead in terms of time and seeing with the presentation and the conference itself, we're talking about the aging population of baby boomers living longer. So, what is the importance of dividends? Even though it's taken a back seat over the last 20, 30 years because we've had high teen growth, 15, 20% growth, so it's taken a lesser importance. But looking forward in this low return environment, what is its position in terms of portfolio construction for you and your clients? Well, obviously the US regulatory changes will change the attitude towards PE. I think management will change the attitude towards towards dividends. And you're already seeing companies that are offering a higher payout ratio or higher dividend being re-rated by the market because the clients or investors are valuing that certainty of that return via the dividend. And so you're seeing PEs being re-rated as a result. I think also you're probably seeing payout ratios increasing. They've fallen quite precipitously ever since 1994, and I think that'll change quite significantly. Unlike a lot of the consumers around the world, the corporations are cashed up, so obviously they're looking to make value accretive acquisitions, increasing the payout ratio, increasing the dividend, or some buyback or a combination of all of those. And so that can only add to the argument of increasing dividends in terms of rewarding shareholders for their time and patience. The crux in terms of long term is that the baby boomers will be living longer and they'll need more than ever a greater dependency on income, that is inflation, above inflation income. And as you know, if you put $100 in the bank in 5 years, it's still $100. So what you need is an investment that grows $100, reinvests and grows those earnings, grows those dividends over time. And over the long term, if you're living 20, 30 years, the impulse cost on your portfolio to provide a growing income stream is arguably more relevant now than it ever has, been the last 20, 30 years. There's no free ride here. And so in a low return environment where whatever the expected return you have is 8, 9, 10%, if I can put in my pocket 3, 4% with relatively less risk, I don't have to chase 8, 9, 10% and all that volatility that goes along with that to produce those returns over the long term. And think about it. If those managers have only given you a 1% yield, they have to chase another 2 or 3% before they break even with the dividend. And so in terms of risk-adjusted returns, it's more imperative over the long term to have an above-average yielding portfolio in your global portfolio. It's very much what we're used to here in Australia. Thank you very much.